Garcia, Rick Emerson radio program. Hello there. It's 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. See, I almost don't want to know now. Scotty's saying that he's gotten a bunch of people calling who they, and they know what the foghorn sound is.
And it's driving him insane. He was, like, seething in here because I told him I didn't want to know.
He's seething?
Wait, hold on. Let's,
Scotty J, this is David Cassidy. I don't know what else to say except...
You're not going to mount the squad!
Scotty, please summon him to the studio.
Beam us up, Scotty.
Scotty J, hello, sir. How are you?
Good morning. And it's still 2-3 minutes till, so... Right?
Yes, yes, you've got me there, Scotty. Okay, so now here's the thing. So we found this cart labeled Foghog. And Sarah... And
I like that.
It really is genius. Now, I was speculating as to what that could possibly be used for. And so you said you've had a bunch of people call with the actual answer.
Yes.
See, the actual answer is almost... But see, it's almost certainly going to be less interesting. The actual answer... almost has to be less interesting than whatever it is I could come up with. So is it? Are you in fact seething? That
no.
You're okay. Sarah claimed you were.
You're a little angry, Scotty J.
Sarah
angry.
Claimed you were seething that you couldn't come in and reveal what this. Here, let me ask you this. So when I find out,
Worf.
When I find out what this sounder was actually used for, is it going to be disappointing? Is it going to be anticlimactic?
The question that I have is, what do you think it is? Just
go ahead.
Take a guess.
I have no, that's the thing, is I have
it has to
no reference. I have no context. Look, I've worked at a lot of bad radio stations. I've done a lot of bad radio shows.
I do more than you.
And I'm doing my best to stay quiet right now.
Look at how hard it is for him to keep his mouth shut about it.
I'm just saying... Here's an example. I'm going to just play it real quickly. Here's just a couple other carts that I found back there. I was talking to John Paul, who's the program director for KUPL, yesterday. And I was going, yeah, we went through all of these carts that we found back there. And I was talking about that one that we found that was the Untoppable Smokey or whatever, and how that was kind of interesting. Because most of the others are just the same old thing. And I don't mean that as a knock on them. I'm just saying there are a lot of stock sound effects that every radio station and every radio show has to have. And Tim, you've worked at these radio stations where there are stock radio sound effects that everybody has to have.
The applause.
The applause, the buzzer for a wrong guess.
Boo.
On something. The, let's see, like this. Give Tim the headphones here. This, let's see, we've got this right here.
There they go.
See, we've got...
You better hurry.
This one is entitled High Guess.
And let's play High Low.
This one is entitled Low Guess. And that is clearly for a game of High Low, which is really like an even more pedantic game than The Secret Sound. That's where, I swear to God, the DJ just picks a number, and then the audience just spends all morning trying to figure out what the number is. And he either says, your call, you know, your guess is low... Or your guess is
high.
High. That's it. So, I mean, I've heard all of these sound effects like a billion times.
And nobody wins because no salesperson's gone out to trade out the prizes yet.
Have you been to that waterbed store yet?
You've just won a bouquet of flowers and you must drive 75 miles to pick it up.
How would you like some trade at a mudflap store?
How would you like your colon cleaned? Oh, somebody did that.
High. Thoroughly, please. I've worked in radio where I've used a lot of these beds over and over again. This, though... I have no rational explanation. I can't...
Oh, maybe that's the affection connection.
I have no... That's the... That's for the
spousal arousal.
The spousal arousal. What are you talking about? Did you... Okay. The spousal arousal hour.
Oh, I love morph.
Anywho. So I have no framework I can construct in my head in which that's an appropriate sound effect. What bit could you be doing? What contest? What character could you have that would require... That! And all I can picture is the guy in front of the microphone, and the faces he must have had to contort himself into to make that sound, by the way. And we all know exactly what that guy looks like. You know what this guy looks like? That guy looks like that, hey, my name's Smokey guy on the Geico commercials or whatever that. What is that commercial where it's the I'm Smokey the biker?
I just keep picturing a guy that looks like kind of like a mole that we used to work with.
A mole?
A mole. Well, like a mole like on someone's face, like, or a mole.
And maybe
animal.
Wore some multicolored suspenders to hold his pants
oh,
up.
Oh, that guy. Oh, yeah.
That's
that
who
guy.
I picture doing it.
More fog.
All right. Anywho. So, all right. Well, we'll get back to it. Thank you, Scott. Ladies and gentlemen, he is your president, prophet, seer, and revelator. At the Ministry of Truth, he is Tim Riley.
It's time for the Rick Emerson Noon News Hour from AM 970 Solid State Radio. And now, from the Ministry of Truth, this is Tim Riley.
My mind has been bulk erased after that one. I really don't know how to continue here.
You've been degaussed.
I have.
Nap.
Okay. Well, I'm sure it's going to be cold again tonight because there's no big local story, so it's going to be cold again tonight. That's all the local news we have. Let's get the national stuff. It's time for the Battle Watch.
I want you to remember that no bastard ever won war by dying for his country. He won it by making the other poor dumb bastard die for his country.
The new Defense Secretary, Robert Gates, says it remains unclear how long the, in quotations, temporary, out of quotations, U.S. military buildup ordered by the president in Iraq will last. But he said the U.S. Should know pretty soon whether the Iraqis are living up to their part. After all, they have to finish this war that we were nice enough to begin for them.
Pretty soon. I wonder if they could possibly vague that up for us at all.
Probably the next presidential election.
That was the really clever thing about that speech, is at no point did he put any actual date or timeline or exit point at any of this. It can just sort of go on as long as he needs it to.
And you will notice, this happened about the same time that that picture was sent out to everyone with a tear falling down the president's cheek.
Man, did that make you want to toss your freaking cookies or what? You know exactly what I'm saying. Sir, did you see that picture of the George Bush crying?
No.
It was, and it was totally, it was the day a president cried. And it, he was at the...
Maybe he had a pretzel stuck in his throat.
I just gotta stay away.
And I'm not trying to make light of the occasion that,
no,
that he was attending. He was attending, that was a funeral of yet another dead soldier right. from Iraq. But there's, it was, you know, this is all well and good that the president attends those things and so forth. But it's like this clearly the stage-managed, contrived moment where he, and he's looking at the camera. That's the thing. He's looking right at the camera. And
camera one? The one with the red light?
Exactly. He's standing and he is turning it like a 30-degree left profile. And I swear to God, like he's ironized Cody.
He was right on his mark.
Floating in a goddamn canoe through a litter-filled river. He looks right at the camera and then like the single solitary tear rolls right down his left cheek. And then it was all over the news reports and all over the internet for the next day.
Yeah.
God.
Do you know Ironized Cody was actually an Italian?
Really?
Yep. He pulled that off his whole career.
Are you making that up?
It wasn't released till after he died. He was an Italian.
Did Ironized Cody ever do anything but that commercial? What did he do before he did that commercial?
He would wave in parades.
Anybody just say,
sit on floats?
How? That's it. I would not. I mean,
as a good Italian, Indian would do.
All Italians are Indians. All of them.
Yes.
All right.
Well, anyway, getting back to this story. All Americans know that the stakes in Iraq are enormous, and we know that the situation is currently unacceptable, says Condoleezza Rice. So, she's not out of trouble yet. Senator Barbara Boxer went a few rounds with Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice on Capitol Hill. During the Senate hearings, the California Democrat hinted that Rice does not understand the pain a parent suffers when their child is sent to Iraq because Rice herself has no children. Therefore, she has no idea how a mother's pain feels.
Who pays the price? I'm not going to pay a personal price. My kids are too old and my grandchild is too young. You're not going to pay particular price, as I understand it, with an immediate family.
Who will taste die alone?
Who will taste the sweet wine of their tears, Condoleezza Rice?
Selfish woman who
what?
Refuses to become pregnant.
Why won't you be a broodmare for the state? Oh, or what is that? Is that, am I thinking of,
I don't think it matters. Is that
They Live? Marry and reproduce. Oh, my God. And why doesn't she have a man in her life anyway?
She's married to the state.
Really? Is that what they call that?
I believe so. Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice responds.
I fully understand the sacrifice that the American people are making, and especially the sacrifice that our soldiers are making, men and women in uniform. I visit them. I know what they're going through. I talk to their families. I see it.
You know what? I didn't even...
What does she actually do all that?
I think she flogs people. I really think
that's... Oh, those boots?
No, well, maybe. I mean, depending on how much they're willing to pay, I suppose. I think that George Bush spends his days in his office face down, nipple deep in the shag carpeting of his office, and Condoleezza Rice jumps up and down on his back while wearing spike heels and calling him a bad little schoolboy, and then she hits him in the head, and then she takes him out, and they, you know, and then they have a light lunch, and then they resume after the... that's it, man. She's freaky looking. I mean, every time you see her, you just... whenever I see her, I just hear that kind of dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun, which is the same thing that kind of makes her hot, because she always has that weird Teutonic look going on, where she's got the full-on black leather coat. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, there was this photograph that went around in the early days of the photoshopping on the Internet. There was this photograph that went around of Hillary Clinton dressed up as a dominatrix. And it was... kind of, I don't know, it was like 96, 97, and it was just this widely circulated Photoshop image that everybody kind of found amusing. Ha ha, look, it's Hillary, and she's all dressed up in leatherwear. But if you saw an actual picture of Condoleezza Rice dressed as she normally is, which is in those thigh-high Gestapo boots, and then the black Matrix coat, and then just like the really intense thousand-yard stare, but then she was also holding like a cat of nine tails... Like, would you in any way doubt that it was a legitimate photo? I mean, it just seems completely natural.
I think she should hold a lightsaber.
I have no, but it would have to be the red one, the double-ended one. It's a lightsaber. You know what I didn't catch until we were a second sound bite into this is that you said Barbara Boxer went a few rounds on the Hill. Mm-hmm. I didn't even notice that. That's how subtle your wit is, Tim Riley. Sometimes I just flat out miss it altogether.
Well, Tony Snow says he wants Barbara Boxer to apologize to Rice for launching a personal attack against her because she refuses to have children like most people.
I don't know if she was intentionally that tacky, but I do think it's outrageous. Here you got a professional woman, Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice, and Barbara Boxer is sort of throwing little jabs because Condi doesn't have children.
Barbara Boxer is throwing little jabs.
The concerns of parents. You know, we're greatly backward for feminism.
What are you going to use that uterus for? You can't just store fruit in there.
And so forth.
Tony Snow says, oh no, the U.S. is not preparing for war with Iraq or Syria or both.
But the follow-on question is, then what do you do, and we're interested in hearing, what do you do to ensure the security of America, and what do you do to ensure the success of Iraq?
All right.
That doesn't answer the question now, does it?
No.
John McCain said the new initiative gives the U.S. the best chance at Iraq, and he backs up President Bush.
Potentially catastrophic consequences of failure demand that we do all we can to prevail in Iraq.
I think we're already there.
A substantial and sustained increase in U.S. forces in Baghdad and Anbar province is necessary to bring down the toxic levels of violence there.
Who replaced his enthusiasm with Folger's crystals?
Mm-hmm.
Damn, man. Remember when John McCain used to sound all alive and sparkly and fiery? Those days are long gone.
Anonymous callers have claimed the Greek leftist group Revolutionary Struggle is behind today's rocket attack on the U.S. Embassy in Athens. Greek anti-terrorist officers at the scene believe the rocket was launched from a building across the street from the embassy. Our ambassador to Athens, Charles Reese, calls the attack a senseless act of violence, but stops short of calling it a terrorist attack.
I am treating it as a very serious attack.
I swear to God, the foghog is in the back.
I thought you were playing foghog.
That's not me.
No, that, he has his own foghog in that embassy.
It's one of the perks.
Mm-hmm.
That and a private washroom.
Yeah.
I am treating it as a very...
I'm sorry, we shouldn't laugh. I don't know. Let's back up here for a second. This is our embassy?
Yes.
Now, doesn't this come one day after we attack somebody else's embassy?
Yeah.
I'm sure those are unrelated events.
Yeah.
Was there a loss of life? And
no.
Okay, so can we poke fun?
Sure, go ahead.
Well, no, I'm asking, because if this was a thing that resulted in loss of life, obviously it's not something...
I don't think there is.
It's not grist
no
for...
injuries.
It's not grist for the...
No injuries.
No injuries, so there you go. So, A, we can say that it does sound a lot like this guy has a fog hog in the background. Wait, here's the actual fog hog. And then in the background, we
I am treating it as a very serious attack. We will determine what it is when we know.
I think from now on, the Rick Emerson Show should claim responsibility for all of these acts. You know what I mean? Because you always get the, like, whatever, where there's some, you know, like some pizza shop that gets blown up or something. And then there's some guy, you know, the Islamic People's Front of Judea, publicly, you know, we are responsible for this. And they claim responsibility. I think from now, Susan Reynolds, just attention, I think we from now on, the Rick Emerson Show should put out press releases claiming responsibility for all of these acts. Every time something happens, every time there's a kidnapping, every time there's a bank robbery, something is blown up, something is stolen, something is vandalized, the Rick Emerson Show takes responsibility for all of these acts. Here's Tim Riley at the Ministry of Truth.
The Pentagon has abandoned the limit on the time a civilian soldier or a citizen soldier can be required to serve on active duty, a major change that reflects an army stretched so thin that, well, really can't be depended upon. The day after President Bush announced his plan for a deeper U.S. military commitment in Iraq, General Peter Pace, the chairman of the Chiefs of Staff, told reporters the change in reserve policy would have to be made anyway because active duty troops already have been getting too little time in between combat tours. Until now, the Pentagon's policy on the Guard or Reserve was that members' accumulated time on active duty for Iraq or Afghanistan could not exceed 24 months. Now the limit is now limited. The remaining limit is on... This is so confusing. Okay, here's...
I wasn't going to ask.
Here we go. Let's try this one again. And this is from the Pentagon. The accumulated limit is now lifted. The remaining limit is on the length of any single mobilization, which may not exceed 24 consecutive months. Is that understandable? In other words, a civilian soldier could be mobilized for a 24-month stretch in Iraq or Afghanistan, then demobilized and allowed to return to civilian life, only to be mobilized a second time for as much as an additional 24 months.
I have no idea what we're talking
about. Neither does anybody else in the service. They can do whatever they want.
That's, I mean, I guess it's just...
Can you imagine, you know, Joe the Soda Jerk from Peoria, who just took off his pack and put back on his Soda Jerk uniform.
I just wanted to go to college. I think it just saves him... I think
we're supposed to make this understandable.
It just means that you're there forever, I think, which I guess is maybe a prudent use of resources.
All for a T-shirt and a couple of iTunes downloads.
I just wanted to play that first-person shooter they had on the website. Oh, God. Now I'm getting all these ironized Cody emails.
See?
All right. Let's see here. Oh, but we've got this subject line, the Fog Hog. Rick, the Fog Hog is scaring the living crap out of me. Every time I hear that damn clip, I think of some morbidly obese killer who only murders on foggy nights. Just imagine being pursued by some lurching freak down a foggy alley as he grunts.
I love fog.
And oinks. More fog. I love fog. Oink, oink, etc. The voice sounds satanic, and every time you play it, I have to check around me just to make sure some deformed half-ton maniac isn't hiding in my office. Please, please, for the love of God, quit playing the Fog Hog.
No.
No, sir, that's not going to happen. But we will try to intersperse it with other things every now and again. All right. Let's see. Rick, Tim is absolutely... You don't know who Iron Eyes Cody is, probably. That's probably before your time. But there's a famous television commercial, which...
PSA.
It's a PSA.
It came out during the Johnson administration.
And you... Really? Is it that old?
Yeah, it's that old.
I thought it was 70s.
No, it came out before that because that was, I believe, part of Lady Bird Johnson's Keep America Beautiful campaign.
Oh, yeah.
They had to give her something to do.
She wasn't quite forward-thinking enough to just be a drunk. So there was... But you always see this on, like, lists. Like, they'll do these programs where it's, like, greatest TV spots of all time or whatever, and the most powerful commercials ever. And it's always, like, the Macintosh 1984 one, and then it's the, that one that only ever played once. Was it a McGovern ad with the little girl who gets nuked?
That was,
Was that McGovern?
No, it was, the other guy. Who ran, I can't remember his name. He was from Arizona. He was a
Goldwater.
Republican. Goldwater.
Yeah, where the little girl is like, you know, and she's making like a daisy chain, you know, or whatever. She's like sitting playing with flowers and then like, and then suddenly you see her skeleton and then she's a pile of cinder and then the commercial's over. And it's a whole lot of, you know, like father, like son or whatever the tagline is. There's this famous though commercial that came out in the late 60s, I guess, which is, or during the LBJ era, which is It's Iron Eyes Cody, who at the time we all believed was an Indian. Now, I hate to... Now, look, I hate to ask this
If you
question.
Have publicity people telling America that you're an Indian, you're an Indian. Go hire somebody and tell them to tell the American public you are an Indian. Then forever you're an Indian.
We should totally do that.
Unless you're reinvented as something else.
We should... People
aren't smart enough to check these things out. We all know that.
We should totally...
There's nobody available to investigate. Go find out if Iron Eyes Cody's an Italian, will you, when you have a spare moment there, Frank? I don't think that happened. Obviously not. Oh, we can't do that. We'll get in trouble with the Babyface Nelson in Jersey. It's his cousin. He'll end up in a landfill somewhere.
Yes. Well, then, that kind of trumps any observation I was going to make.
I'm sorry.
I was merely going to suggest that we start saying Scotty is black. Just because. You know, Scotty J, blah, 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 a black man. Just to see. Just because.
Oh, and put one of those accent marks on one of the E's.
Scotty. Scotty Ja. With a period between the Scotty and the J.
Yeah.
So Iron Eyes Cody was, at the time, we thought was an Indian.
Right.
And there's this famous commercial where he is, and he's all dressed. This sounds so bad. I'm wading just so deep into this. I was going to say he's dressed, you know, like an Indian. But very much like a white man would depict an Indian, which is he's got the braids and he's all like...
Not very threatening.
I forget it. He spoke very well. No, in fact, he doesn't speak at all. That's the great thing about the commercial is it's like he's canoeing through a river. And he's all dressed in like buckskin or whatever it is that white people think that Indians wear all the time. So he's all dressed in his Indian garb and he's canoeing down a river. And he looks down and the canoe is just, and it's just, the river is filled with trash. And the river is just filled with soda cans and cups and cigarette butts. And the river is just full of crap. It's litter. And he's canoeing through and it's all like, in the background, it's all like a lot of... But like an Indian instrument, so it's all like, you know, with a flute or something, like some Art Bell Cusco music. And then the camera zooms in on his face, and he turns, and he does this great, like, 30%, he does this 30-degree turn to the camera, and he looks, and then there's just, like, the single tear, like, rolling down his cheek.
I remember that!
See, that's the thing, it's a famous, probably the most famous television commercial ever, really. I mean, all things being equal. And, of course, the message is that the dirty, filthy white man has come and destroyed everything, which is kind of true.
But what's the Indian doing in a canoe, in his native garb off the reservation, looking at white people's trash?
What are you... How did you get out here?
Seriously.
Did someone leave a gate open? That's the real tragedy of the commercial.
Yeah. Nobody ever... I mean, what's he doing there? Is he looking for the native village?
Oh, God. Anyway, but... So then the upshot apparently is that he's not even an Indian. He's Italian. And so what I was going to ask is... we should just excerpt this whole thing and send it to HR right now. Dear Laura Clyde, best program ever. Pleased to be listening to this. And so I was going to ask, if he is not if he's not Indian, he is Italian. And it's a horrible thing to say, but my question, now did they, was he cosmetically altered in some fashion? Because he is...
He just had a bad complexion.
And so therefore is perfect to play an Indian. Look, we have this role... We have this role of an Indian. Can you find someone who's Pocky? Rick, this email says, Tim is absolutely correct about Iron Eyes Cody being Italian.
I'm sorry to ruin these American legends for people. The truth has to be told at some point.
He's just an Italian with bad skin.
Mm-hmm.
As for what he did... I'm sorry, I got to get control here. Rick, Tim is absolutely correct about Iron Eyes Cody being Italian. As for what he did, Tim is also correct about waving in parades. 18 years straight, I went to the Rose Parade in California, yep. And he was there every year.
And he was the big... he was America's foremost Indian.
He's a... Toward the end, he was so old and feeble, they would literally tie him to his horse. The horse would be galloping down the parade route, and he would be limply bouncing atop of it. Except it was less atop the horse than tilting at a 40-degree angle off to the side, wearing the biggest feather headdress you've ever seen. Oh, my God. I just love the idea. I mean, I can't put it any better than that. Tied to a horse, tilting it like a 40-degree angle as the horse gallops down the road.
In real life, you know, he's probably driving a Bentley somewhere. He's never been on a horse.
Working at a cement company. Oh, my God in heaven.
Well, that's what we're here for.
To clarify these things.
Yes, we are.
So let's just...
Ionized
recap, Ted Cassidy is Thing, and Ionized Cody was an Italian who had to be tied to his horse while wearing a huge headdress. Oh, my God. Let's see here. We've got Rod. You're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello, sir.
Hey, Rick. This is Rod.
Hi.
Hey, I just wanted to let you know Ionized Cody also put out a small book on Indian Sign Language. So he's in there with photographs.
Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? Really?
Nope. We have it at home. It's quite funny. It's very old.
It was a simpler time, wasn't it?
Is there a book of Ionized Cody's Italian Kitchen anywhere?
I don't know, but as a Native American, we found it pretty funny, and that's why we have it. So, you know, he's out there... back in the 60s, early 70s, out there.
Now this is a question. Let me ask you this, and this is an interesting question. Because we had Kane on Kung Fu being played by a white man, we have Ionized Cody, who's Italian, playing an Indian. Now, you guys are there and you're seeing this. Now, when you saw him on television for the first time, did you kind of go, "That's no Indian"? Did you spot him as being a faker right away?
Not really. I was a little kid, so, you know, you buy into all that kind of pan-Indian Cherokee stuff, so, you know.
Cherokee?
Yeah, you know, white people who
I understand.
Like to be Cherokee.
I understand the term. I just never heard that before. Cherokee. That's fantastic. Okay, well, and that's a thing. God, that's a thing, and especially, I mean... I don't know what it is, man. It is specifically that lineage, more than any other, that dumbass white people are... No. I am 164th Navajo on my mother's side, so I will be expecting a check any day now. It's just people just desperate for some identity or culture, and the Indian culture is what they always... I think because they feel like it's impossible to disprove. That's right. The thing, because how can you really prove that it's not true?
Well, we're less than, I think it's less than 1% of the population, so who's gonna argue with you?
Well, that's right. Like Tim said, there really is no bureau of, like, Cherokee investigation. It's just not there. All right. I would like to leave you with this thought, Rod. Scotty has created something very special for us now. Let's,
Thank you so
Thanks, Rick.
Thank you. See, it's James Brown and Connie Chung. Mixed together.
Like ebony and ivory. Sinking in perfect harmony.
We'll be back after this. It's the Rick Emerson Show. All right. Hello. It's the Rick Emerson radio program. 503-733-2970. That really is addictive. You gotta... you can email if you like. It's Rick at rickemerson.com. Rick at... Speaking of... remind me to bring in Scotty J here in a while. It's 503-733-2970. In mere seconds, we're rejoined by Tim Riley at the Ministry of Truth.
Are we going to have another suburban perspective today?
I hadn't really planned on... Well, maybe. I hadn't really planned on it, but... I never say no to suburban perspective because I got the music, which I'm really proud of. And we like to, and then we have the.
Yay!
That's fantastic. Let's. What do we got here? We got the. We'll get Jeff and George in a second. Eric here on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Hey Rick, I wanted to call you and tell you about the Geek Watch on the floor of Congress this morning.
Which is what?
Well, David Wu was out there talking about, I swear to God, talking about Klingons and Vulcans. He was making some sort of analogy to the Vulcans being the Republicans, and they're actually Klingons. And he ended his speech on the floor of Congress saying, let's not be led by false Klingons. This is a U.S. representative.
Are you sure? I mean, I guess you wouldn't be making this up, but I mean, really? Where? I'm amazed that nobody else took... Damn you, everybody else. It's a shame that no offense to you, Eric, but that you had to be the one to tell me. I can't believe everybody didn't tell me that.
No, if I'm making it up, may that sounder that you just played play in my ears forever. But it's God's honest truth.
That is fantastic. All right, so somebody has to find his audio of that being... And that was this morning?
Yeah, that was either this morning or yesterday. I heard it reported way early this morning on not that I was listening to another station.
Of course, no, but
maybe on a different station.
But if you had been listening to another station, that might have been where you heard it.
Yeah, it might have been where I heard it.
All right, fantastic, excellent. Well, we'll look into it. Thank you, sir. I appreciate that.
Thank you for being on, Rick. Greatest show ever.
Thank you. I appreciate that, my friend. You spread the word. There you go. That's Eric right there, the Rick Emerson Show. This is Jeff. You're on the Rick Emerson program. Hello.
Hey, I'm here.
What's up?
Oh, you were talking earlier about the, how we're going to get people to do what we got to do over in Iraq. A buddy of mine was with the Jumpin' Junkies, 101st Airborne.
Uh-huh.
He lives down in Georgia. He got a letter in the mail from the Department of Defense telling him to appear for reinduction.
Oh, is that a lot of the, I was out and they pulled me back in?
Yeah. Well, the problem is he's a Vietnam era vet. He's 56 years old, and to top it off, he's a paraplegic from wounds from Vietnam.
Are we leading up to some sort of a bad punchline?
No, not at all. This is an absolutely true story, except for the bottom line was they sent the U.S. Marshals to the Veterans Hospital in Atlanta to pick him up and take him to Fort Benning. And... Are you still there?
Yes.
I'm sorry. I was waiting for a caffeinated response. But anyway.
I don't understand what's going on in this phone call. Tim, would you like to step in and take over here?
Okay, my good man.
Yes, sir.
So, are we saying that this veteran has been called back in is incapable of serving his country at this point?
I'm unclear about whether this is a fake call or not because it doesn't make any sense.
Well, it happens. It's happened to a lot of guys. Some of it's stop loss, and some of it is they're scraping the barrel for cadre people to do training.
So he's okay, all right. But no,
through old files.
I understand it, but I mean it because again, I don't mean to be flip about your friend's condition. But so he's 56. You say he's 56 and a paraplegic.
Yes.
Okay, but they're going to have him do training of other guys.
Well, when they got him down to Fort Benning, they said, "Oops, sorry."
Oh, so it was, I see. So they were just kind of combing through, just looking for everybody they could possibly find, and they didn't even bother to investigate his condition.
That is correct.
Okay, because again, I was just picturing a 56-year-old guy with no legs just being tossed out of a plane somewhere over Iraq, like, you know, good luck, you know, and just sort of your tax dollars at work, I guess. God, well, that's just insane. And so they got him down there, and did they figure out that it was a mix-up, they sent him home?
Yeah.
God.
Yeah, with a thank you and an excuse us and oh, we're so sorry and blah, blah, blah.
Well, that's like that horrible thing that happened last week where the Pentagon sent out a bunch of reenlistment requests to the families of soldiers that had been killed in Iraq.
Yeah.
So, yeah, somebody clearly needs to upgrade their computer system at that place. All right. Thank you, Jeff.
Yep. Bye-bye.
All right, there you go. Yeah, I just couldn't figure that out. Okay. So at least they figured out it was a mistake. That has made no sense. And one more here. George, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Rick, this is you.
Hi.
On that happy note, Hey, I was going to say, wouldn't you shed a tear, too, if you paddled your canoe all the way from Italy just to be surrounded by a bunch of floating garbage?
All right. Thank you, sir.
Hey, Bon Scott rules.
Yes, he does. Yes, he does. That's George. Here's Tim Riley at the Ministry of Truth. What a strange program.
Well, the countdown is on for the return of Fox's hit series, 24. Season 6 of 24 is action-packed. It kicks off Sunday night with Jack Bauer, who's played by Kiefer Sutherland, being brought back from Chinese custody to stop internal terrorist attacks on the U.S. To get you in the mood, here is an edited clip of the trailer. It's number 2.
A threat will rise. Fear will grow. And our only hope lies with one man.
Where is me to sacrifice yourself? Our cities have been targeted by a series of terror attacks. Thousands of civilians are dead.
If we want these attacks to stop, Jack Bauer has to be sacrificed.
Do you understand the difference between dying for something and dying for nothing? Say, I can die for something.
Oh, seriously,
my
are way. You kidding me?
My no. choice.
All right. Look, here's the thing. I know that everybody watches that show, and everybody, that is to say, it, like with so many things, everybody...
What time is that on? I don't watch it.
No one knows. Everybody but the people in this room. Scotty, do you watch 24? It seems like you might be a 24 watcher.
I think the kids might be watching something.
Maybe. No. No! I know it's only a two-letter word, but N... And space, no, space, caps, as though to really underscore the fact that he does not. I'm not trying to dog the show, I guess. I know a lot of people whose opinions I respect who watch that program, but really, that just sounds terrible. And it's that last, let's get it, it's that last 10 seconds there that really makes you cringe and do it.
Grow, and our only hope lies with one man.
We're asking you to sacrifice.
Did they really just say one man, unironically?
Cities have been targeted by a series of terror attacks.
Almost 1,000 civilians are dead.
If we want these attacks to stop, Jack Bauer has to be sacrificed.
Here we go.
Do you understand the difference between dying for something and dying for nothing? Say, I can die for something. My way. My choice.
If you can't really act, just whisper and speak slowly, because it gives you gravity.
All right, here's Tim Riley.
The winner with a crocodile hunter was on Larry King last night. This woman says, he would have never blamed the animal for any injuries he suffered.
No, why would you do that?
He would have been proud of
his injuries.
Whatever it was, and yeah. that he came through it unscathed, and it's crikey. Not the Ray's fault. And crikey, mate, I love Ray's, and all animals are wonderful, and you just have to be careful with them.
Give the animal a high five, and they'd split a Miller.
Well, let's talk about dangling the infant set in front of the large crocodile during one of the shows.
Understand, Bindi was a month old and did her first croc show. And in fact, Bindi and I would sit in the croc enclosure and have lunch so she could hear the croc show and see the croc come out. And when he did it with Robert and there was such furor and uproar, it completely broadsided.
Was that Bindi in that video when he's dangling the baby in front of the croc?
No, Bindi was watching.
Oh, okay, all right.
That was Robert here.
Beans
or sitting... Ralph or whatever the son's name is.
Snacky.
Bindi's a little... We're going to speak to Bindi in just a moment.
Bindi's in the crowd just being glad that it's not her.
Yeah.
The croc show. Is the croc show right next to the donkey show? Here's, okay. Here's...
So let's speak with that sweet child, Bindi, who says she was...
Oh, I'm sorry. Go... Stop talking. All right, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
She says she was lucky to have the crocodile hunter in her life, even for a short period of time.
He was just really nice. He was loving. He was caring. He was just everything that you could want for a dad.
No soul in that girl. She casts no reflection. She does not fog a mirror. Her eyes are black like the eyes of the devil himself.
But she was able to read it flawlessly up the teleprompter.
Well, that's what I'm saying. It's, what about this plane crash that just happened in L.A.?
That was at Van Nuys. It was a business airplane with two people dead.
Oh.
Van Nuys is not where you're landing. Van Nuys is, a small business airport.
No, it has no...
That's where all the traffic copters fly out of Van Nuys. It's across the street from Tommy's and the Keebler Cookie Factory.
The sheets are red and moist where I'm lying. God in heaven, teach me how to die.
But I'm sure it's fine now.
I hate you so much.
It's okay. No, how many plane crashes could there be in one day?
Stop!
You're safe. No,
stop
I'm
talking.
You're not flying in and out of Van Nuys Airport.
No.
You're flying out of LAX.
LAX, which is actually the second most dangerous airport in the world after the Hong Kong airport.
But there are thieves, too.
So your body will be picked clean before it's found. I'm sorry. I guess it's not really a laugh line.
What have I done to you?
No, I guess what I'm saying is, look.
Okay, I don't want to talk about it.
No, here's.
No, I know what you're going to say. I don't want to talk about
it. What am I going to say?
Because there's only been one plane crash. Like, you're tempting fate. I don't want to talk about
it. All I'm saying is.
Rick.
And this is the final thing I'll say.
Stop.
These guys, unfortunate though it is, it's like having a lightning rod on top of your house. They drew your fire. If God was trying, they
you are, oh,
they drew the fire for your plane.
You're freaking me out.
All right.
It's not really like a real airport. It's like the Hillsborough Airport.
Oh, look at this. They left the door open on the plane when they took off.
What?
Did somebody fall out?
The plane's left-hand baggage door had been left wide open as it took off and then caught the air acting like a giant scoop on the side of the plane.
Oh,
the jet weaved from side to side and then crashed into the ground.
Only in L.A.
No, it's true. All right, here's Tim Riley.
Meanwhile, a cold snap is hitting Southern California. Forecasts call for record low temperatures through the weekend. National Weather Service has issued a freeze warning for the Santa Monica Recreational Area, the San Fernando, San Gabriel, and Santa Clarita Valleys. Areas where hard freeze is expected. A freeze warning is issued when temperatures are expected to dip below 28 degrees.
Wow.
Sir X Dillon
said. Best California trip ever.
Woo! I've got my bathing suit packed.
I can't wait to go to Los Angeles.
Snow level will also drop.
Is it your first trip to L.A. or California?
I was born in California.
Oh,
I've been,
where?
I've been to California.
I didn't know that. Where?
Actually, in Oceanside, which I guess is right near there.
That's where all the rich people live.
Yeah. All right.
No, my dad was in the Navy. We weren't all the rich folk.
But you haven't been to L.A. as an adult?
No, I've never been to L.A.
All right. Well, it's
you'll find it delightful.
Yeah.
I'm very excited.
I'm just going to go somewhere different.
Live there on our salary, I'll tell you that.
Make sure that you've got a hard exit date. It's like Salt Lake. Otherwise, it'll suck you in. You'll just become bitter.
It'll eat you alive.
Your pores will
become
filled with...
You'll waste away. A whole decade will be gone. You'll say, what have I done with my life?
Yeah.
I thought you were going to play The Fog.
Oh, no, I was going to...
I was waiting for a response.
You.
Here's Tim Riley. Your pores will become filled with grit and anger. begin peeling away layer of layer after skin to try to look normal.
I'm really looking forward to like trying to get into a club and then being rejected.
Well, I don't know. See, that's the thing about L.A.
Because like, I'm not willing to pay like cover charges. I don't believe
you.
I
think you can. You pass.
Yeah, well, because...
Lots of eyeliner.
Yeah.
Lots of eyeliner?
Mm-hmm. Lots of eyeliner. And,
okay.
And you'll be with, you know, some hot chicks, you know, one of whom is Storm, and she's people who knows people.
Yep.
And the thing about L.A. is, and then we'll do another story, the thing about L.A. is that, and Tim knows it better, way better than I do, because I didn't live there, but it's just that... The nightlife and the events and the happenings in L.A. are sort of interesting, but the city itself is just unbelievable. Like, you have to flush out of your head any image of New York you've ever had, any big city you've ever been to. You must remove that from your head because L.A. is not that. L.A. is just a big, sprawling, flat, like, three-story town.
Well, millions of cars waiting for the light to change to green.
And just smog and heat and just anger and just bitterness and unemployment
there
everywhere
you
look.
There won't be heat when I'm there.
And then there's a tiny little pocket of big buildings downtown, and then that's it. But LA, and it's just a whole lot of people just beaten down by the sun, eating their own children.
And I mean,
the
man.
It's an ugly place. It really is. It is a lot. You really do have flashes back to that Less Than Zero book when you're in Los Angeles. You're just sort of looking up at the sun and realizing that you're living in a city where everyone has just been driven crazy. So yeah, it's not a good place. Here's Tim Riley.
Meanwhile,
who knows? Maybe you won't even make it there, though. So, I mean, you
might be discovered.
What are you talking about? The sheets are red and more. You are an evil person. I'm glad your seat got stolen.
Oh, that's a terrible thing to say.
You're so mean. You're playing upon my fear. It's one thing, then you're taking it over the line.
I'm sorry. If I step past all right, I'm sorry. I withdraw the comment.
Should we talk about Paula Abdul now or wait?
Yes.
Yes, let's do that. Let's move on to Paula Abdul.
Well, American Idol was having auditions in Seattle, and of course, they were the obligatory local television interviews. Paula Abdul was called upon to do one. However, she didn't seem to be there. And this is from Channel 13.
Good morning, Paula Abdul, live in New York City.
Good morning, everybody.
She can hear us.
So tell us, what are you looking forward to this season? How about a lot of you coming in? It's a wild party where you are.
That's what we hear. We hear that Simon has actually said that this had some of the worst singers that he's ever heard. What did you think of the singers in Seattle?
Well, I have to agree with Simon.
Okay, now here's the thing. And you really should go. This is at PerezHilton.com. But you really have to appreciate how drunk she not only sounds, but looks. Because
she's swaying back
and forth. She's doing that thing that we all associate with Stevie
Wonder.
She
needs something to lean on.
That's exactly. She's doing that thing that Ray Charles and the blind guys do. And they're just sort of like, and just sort of zooming back and forth. And then, like, sometimes the rest of her body will stay still, but then she'll just start wobbling her head back and forth, swishing her hair around, and she's got this weird, dopey, loose... When I say loose face, it's like she doesn't really have a lot of control over her expressions. And she's just... She looks as though her bones have all sort of turned to springy bits of rubber.
She's kind of acting like Michael J. Fox.
Yeah. This whole program has been just one step over the line after another, hasn't it? I'm sorry for making fun of your trip to L.A. Now I feel bad. I feel awkward. See, the thing is, I'm trying to,
I'm sure it'd be flawless and enjoyable.
Who says that to someone who has a fear of flying if you make it?
I didn't, that's not what, I'm just,
you did
I'm
say, trying you to put just
a,
said that.
I'm trying to put a positive spin on it. It didn't really work. I mean, sue me! Fine, I tried! I'm hoping that by making these comments that you can become desensitized to your plane fear.
No, you're amplifying it.
Okay, well, so it didn't go the way, so it went a different way.
Let's listen to more drunk Paula Abdul.
All right. Well, apparently,
as it should be.
Who apparently looks like Michael J. Fox.
Paula! Hey, you know what? It is what it is. And it was brilliant.
Okay. Williams.
That's you are interesting.
Are going to love that. You're going to love, you're going to see what we're talking about.
Okay, you know what? This show has turned into a flat-out star maker, 7 or 8 of last season's alums, pulling record deals. How do you think Idol has changed the face of pop music?
Well, let's put you this way. When the show started, director of the industry said, this show is going to ruin the music industry. And the record industry was already kind of upside down. But now... We are legitimate, and we're churning out mega stars, and it's a show that actually you see great things happen to these kids, and I love it, and I think that it's gonna be around for a while.
Oh, this is so, it's not even.
She sounds like one of the little kids on Little House on the Prairie.
Totally, it does. Like one of the
like
kids,
a 6-year-old, just learning to talk.
One of those kids where they stick their tongue between their teeth and they talk and they go, Mister, we're trying to raise money for the orphanage. So at this point, do we think drunk or high?
She sounds drunk.
I would say drunk. Because
the way she's slurring and swaying.
I have been, on medications and so forth where you have difficulty, your mouth is moving at about half a second behind your brain, and where you're actually having to sort of over enunciate like this, and you end up kind of talking like Carol Channing as you try to speak. But this really is sloppy, is what it is. I mean, this really, and it's the constant slurring of the sibilant S. That's what makes me think that it's drunkenness here.
Yeah, and speaking of great things happening to people, an old buddy of yours, William Hung, he's coming on our show tomorrow morning.
And you're kidding!
Yeah, he is. He'll be here tomorrow, and he seems like a really nice guy. When he auditioned for you, did you have any idea that he was going to become such a cult star?
You know what? I thought that this kid is going to, if anything, prove that he has so much, and a tremendous amount of heart, and he's got drive, and he's a smart kid.
You know what she sounds like? She sounds exactly like Sue Annabelle being the drunken Mrs. Claus on Behind the Christmas. That's exactly what she sounds like.
Yeah.
And boy, did we see how smart he actually really is.
Okay, Paul, I have to go back to something you just said. I have to ask you. Simon Lithgow said the singers in Seattle were crazies, drinking too much coffee. Simon Cowell said these were the worst miserable singers he's ever seen. Why do you think they're so bad here? That's not true.
Okay, this is genius because, A, you know that these guys are trying to drag this interview out now as long as they possibly can.
Because... they want a lot of hits on YouTube.
Absolutely.
And it'll be a great career move to get to, like, Entertainment Tonight.
Yes. Yes, 1,000 times yes. See, this
There's a reason for everything.
You really ought to just have a side career as a media analyst because you absolutely have the perfect intuitive grasp of how these things operate. That's exactly what it is. Because they know now that all you need is one segment like this put up on a blog like this that everybody sees, and yeah, and the next thing you know, you're hosting the best week ever on VH1.
Then there's going to be a catfight between these two interviewees who gets the job.
Absolutely. Paula Abdul now is just doing big sections of this interview with her eyes closed, a big smile on her face, and she's sort of like shaking her head side to side.
Yeah, she's totally Stevie Wonder at the piano.
Yeah. Totally. Or like a six-year-old girl whose whoobie has just come out of the dryer and who's clutching it.
You know what? Listen, any publicity is good publicity. You got to learn to
yes.
eat it up.
Yes, Paula, remember that.
And embrace it and say, Seattle had the best delusional people.
I'm going to tell you something.
There are some excellent contestants that came out of Seattle as well.
Okay, that's good. That's fair. Thank you very much.
And you're welcome.
One other thing we want to ask you really quickly. Today, the website IMDb is reporting that you've signed to star in and produce a live-action movie based on the popular Bratz line. Is that right?
Yes, I'm very excited. I'm producing my first feature film alongside Avi Arad with Marvel Comics and Crystal Sky Productions and Isaac Larian, who has the property of the Bratz dolls. And it's going to be no animation. I'm helping cast four girls that are going to play the roles of these characters. And I get to play a role in it. I'm going to be choreographing it and helping design the look.
Okay, and she's got huge, huge circles under her eyes, and you can see that they put a lot of makeup on her here to try to cover them, but she's just got these massive circles all around her eyes here that they've tried to sort of, like, match the skin tone, and that's clearly not working. Oh, that's fantastic. Ah, it's a good time to be alive. It really is. All right. Well done. Fantastic.
Can't beat that.
No, you really can't. Let's see. What have we got here? We've got, this email says, Rick, in the latest issue of Entertainment Weekly, Paula Abdul claims that she's never been drunk in her life. This is in response to people accusing her of putting liquor in a Coca-Cola cup at one point during the program. All right. It's 503-7...
And ironized Cody is a Native American.
It's 503-733-2970. Rick, the Connie Chung James Brown sound is the worst sound in the world. It makes me want to stab white-hot ice picks into my ears and feels like banging my head repeatedly against a brick wall while a monkey flogs me in the junk repeatedly with a rubber hose. I thought you would like to know. That is from Matt.
Thank you.
All right, fantastic. All right, let's do one more here and then we'll take a break.
Well, Amsterdam is launching a crackdown on crime kingpins in the city's red light district that threatens to leave hundreds of sex workers out of work and has solicited help for a slightly bemused sector, Dutch banks. This is a frontal attack aimed at cutting ties between prostitution and the underworld that uses the sex industry for laundering money, says Mayor Job Cohen. One-third of the businesses have been scrutinized. The other two-thirds will follow. The banks are not really chomping at the bit to finance sex businesses, said a spokesman for the Dutch Association of Banks. Just because prostitution is illegal now doesn't mean it's a respectable field.
Now, I see. Now, Amsterdam is one of those places that I've never...
Oh, you have to go.
See, I don't really know that I would function well there.
You'd love it.
Have you been there?
Yeah.
Why is everybody... Scotty, have you been to Amsterdam? Why am I even asking? No. Have you...
I don't think there are any family-friendly places.
No. No. So I...
It's surreal. Walking down the street and seeing naked people dancing in the windows.
And just...
It's like a mall of prostitution.
It's like the most...
It's a strip mall.
It's a beautiful river and these beautiful buildings. And then all of a sudden there's like a naked girl... I don't know, gyrating in the window like as you're walking by. It's bizarre.
Now is the... Scotty types, I'm in... is the popular depiction of Amsterdam the way that this is always shown in the media, is that true, where it's like you can just go and are legal there?
Marijuana, mushrooms.
Mm-hmm. What about the harder drugs? Now, are the harder drugs legal
there? No, but everywhere you go, right when we got off the Amtrak, I remember this guy's like, hey, want a Nightball? Like, everywhere you go, people are trying to sell you something.
Is it just sort of, now, is it a thing where the cops just kind of turn a blind eye to things that are not legal? In other words, there's certain drugs that are legal and prostitution's legal, but do they sort of turn a blind eye to the whole device in general in Amsterdam?
Well, it's legal and it's part of the tourist trade. So they figure people are going to spend money on other things because they're there.
Yeah.
So it's sort of...
It seems kind of lawless. Like, not in a bad way, but...
Like that Donkey Island in Pinocchio.
I've never been there.
So it functions sort of like gambling in Vegas.
Yes.
Where it's just where they sanction it because it brings people there. It's the draw.
Right.
All right.
Yeah. And you can walk into cafes and they give you a menu on all the different kinds of marijuana they have.
Really?
Yeah. It's now, bizarre.
Now, what about? It's all very confusing. What if? I always wonder this. What if you go to Amsterdam, where pot is legal in certain places, and you just get high constantly, and then you come back to America, and you test positive for it? I always wonder if you can be reprimanded or if you can have criminal action taken against you in America if you test positive for a drug you took in a place where it was legal.
Oh, I don't know.
These are all the things.
I haven't heard cases of
that. That's what I'm saying. These are the things that I wonder. We got Brian Blank coming up in like 5 minutes, don't we?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, we have to break.
Okay.
It's 503-733. I won't play the Blood Rock thing. I won't play, I'll not play the Blood Rock. No, you've made me feel bad.
You should.
You succeeded in making me feel terrible. I didn't know we'd left a happy black comedy mode as we moved into I'm legitimately unnerving you and preying upon your fear of flight mode.
I know.
Very gray. It's a tricky gray area. Then you look over and you say, oh, here I am on the wrong side. I'm sorry.
Oh, I love them.
All right, we'll be back after this. It's the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Brian Blank, Scott Daly, Tony Starlight, Scotty J, the top five, and more of Tim Riley, all on the way straight up to Rick Emerson Radio Program.